All right, go ahead, talk. Say, you're listening to the Word Bros Podcast.
No.
Do it.
No.
Do it. Say, you're listening to the Word Bros Podcast. Do it. You're listening to the Word Bros Podcast. TheWordBros.com. Hello and welcome to another episode of Word Bros. I think this may be four in a row,
four or five. We're doing good.
Yeah, because we had our COVID episode. We had Jason McNamara. We had what's that other one? Who did we do in between Joe, who we're doing today, and
Mario Candelaria?
Mario Candelaria, and now Joe. So that's a lot of Word Bros. And
we're putting Word Bros in your ears.
We're sorry about that.
Yeah, we apologize, but I mean, you're still listening, hopefully.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
So yeah, hoping. So today is a very exciting episode. We have a visitor from all the way across the pond, as the kids like to say, from jolly old England. We're going to talk to Joe Glass, who has a book currently on Kickstarter called Glitter Vipers. It's a wonderful concept. It's a really great idea. You should back this book now. Do it. Joe is a wonderful fella, and you're going to find all that out.
Right. And we love this. We love this.
We do. It's so good.
My vibe.
I mean, there are things that you know will have. The sun will come up in the morning. It will go down it in the evening, and Kevin Cuff will be late for stuff.
At least 2 minutes. At least.
At least. So today we are talking to Joe Glass. Now, Joe, your name came up. We were talking to Jason McNamara a couple weeks ago, and your name came up because we were talking about books that are on Kickstarter that are just so wonderful, and we didn't understand how a publisher couldn't pick them up and why a publisher wouldn't pick them up. And your book that you're currently running, I don't know if it's still running on Kickstarter, because I'm not sure when this is going to come out.
There's like 10 days left.
Okay. So, yeah. But Glitter Vipers is one of those books that, how the hell does a publisher not want this book?
They pass on that.
Yes, yeah.
My bad. I didn't pitch it to anyone.
Okay.
It was one of those things where I was just like, I'm still very new to the pitching and publishers side of thing, because I've just self-published everything up until now, and up until Pride season 2. And I didn't know if that was something which like Comixology would want, and I didn't know if it was something anywhere else would want, because it's a self-contained short original graphic novel, like it's only going to be 60 pages long. So I was a bit like, I don't know if anyone will go for this, but I kind of want to tell this story. So I was just like, I'll just Kickstarter it. So that's what I did. I just went to the and did that. It's had loads of support, and it's been great so far. So
it looks amazing.
That's kind of why it's not picked up by a publisher. But my bad, I did not pitch it to anyone.
Now let me ask you this. Have you had anybody kind of sniff around the project now that it's been launched and funded? Because that's kind of something that does happen on Kickstarter. Like smaller indies will see a book have a lot of momentum and then go, well, maybe we can put this out.
Not as yet, I'll be honest.
That's bullshit.
Yes, I'm with you.
I'm inclined to agree. I mean, like, I would love to get this book out to more people in a bigger way, and like have someone help out and everything. But at the moment it looks like it's just going to be self-published. It'll probably only be, we're looking at the moment doing like 1,000 copy print run.
That's cool.
So like I'll have plenty, and there's been a few stores who backed it. Like I created a store tier for people to get like multiple copies at a reasonable unit cost, so that they can get it for their store and potentially help spread the work around a bit more to people who maybe don't check out Kickstarter, etc. And like that's been taken up by a few people. So like hopefully like it'll spread and everything, but certainly like in terms of publishers who could have possibly got us into like Love As I Am to Think of It Diamond or something like that. Nothing, not a sniff. So
interesting.
So far. I mean, like I've got 10 days left, who knows?
Yeah. Well, tell us, tell the listening audience and Kevin and I what this book is about, Glitter Vipers. It's such a wonderful concept. Like, I'm so in love with this whole
idea. We love this premise.
Yes. I do. I love it. Tell everybody what this book is about.
It's like one of those things where, like, people hear the name and they just immediately sold from the name. and I'm just like, oh, I'm glad I got one right, I guess. So basically, Glitter Vipers is all about this drag queen named Bi Felicia and her LGBTQ friends. Who are actually all members of a survivor support group for people who've like gone through like hate crimes and survived violence, etc. And they kind of get this point in their discussion where they're just like, you know what, I'm angry and I'm allowed to be angry, and they want to do something about it more than just be like, let's just talk about our feelings or let's talk about our community and what we can do to improve laws or whatever like that. All those things are important, but there's also like this anger, and they decide, screw it, let's make a street gang. That's and awesome. They become like this street gang to protect the Manchester gay village here in the UK, and call themselves the Glitter Vipers. And the idea is that they just like marching around the gay village every night with sequin covered baseball bats and stuff like that, and just being like, hell no, you will not be a homophobia, you will not enact violence against our community. We will bring that violence to you first if you try. And just sort of like have that sort of reaction to it, kind of that sort of revenge fantasy, grindhouse, glitter noir element to it all.
It's Death Wish for drag queens.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's kind of awesome. It's perfect. Like, it's perfect.
It's so good.
It was like, I didn't want it to be, it's a serious topic, like, you know, talking about, you know, violence to communities and systemic issues and things like that, but also I didn't want to treat it too seriously. I wanted it to be kind of fun and kind of cathartic in a way, but at the same time I don't want to make fun of anything.
Yes,
so right. I want to tell this fun way of telling this kind of story, but not make fun of it, because like I say, it is a very important topic, and it's, I think that is something which when we're talking about things like the problems we see today, particularly systemic faults and systemic problems affecting minority identities, we very rarely discuss the aspect of anger. And we also, when it does come up, we almost want to treat it like they shouldn't be angry, but that's a bad thing to be. And it's just like, no, they have every right to be angry. So it's kind of looking at that anger and like how it's almost been taken away from minority identities. Like they've almost been taught that you don't have the right to be angry because then you're lowering yourself, etc. When it's just like, when these things happen to you, you have absolutely every right to be angry. So yeah, it's kind of exploring those things, but just also trying to be fun about it. So yeah, I'll have a drag queen lead the group with a jaunty name like Bi Felicia.
That's what I was going to say. That's awesome.
It's so good. Like, you don't understand how wonderful this concept is. And it's not like one of those things where it's like, oh man, I wish I would have thought of that, because I couldn't have. As a straight cis white male, I could not have come up with this book and given it the real voice and kind of experience that it would need. But when you see something and you're just like, God, this is so wonderful. And it's just, I think the only reason why we really wanted to have you on was just so we could gush at you about how awesome your idea is, because it's perfect. Like, it's such a good book. And I understand what you're saying about the anger, because you see it now with like the Black Lives Matter movement, where, you know, your asshole friends on Facebook who you went to high school with will go, well, why do they have to destroy the auto parts store? It's because they're fucking pissed off. And they've been pissed off for 400 years, deservedly so.
And they'll say something like Blue Lives Matter, which makes you pissed off, because you get like, because you're like in the know, and like some people aren't. And then you're like, why are you saying that? Like that, you know, and they're like, I don't understand why me saying that like means something. Like, it means something because, like, it's like all houses matter. Oh, well, let's talk about the house that's on fire. Yeah, that's the one that should matter right now.
What about my house? Yeah. And it's kind of, it's weird because the book is very timely, and you can, everyone could obviously argue, like, when a book is getting released at that sort of timely situation where the content speaks very much to something which is happening right now, kind of thing, that sounds like a positive, but it isn't something we aim for. Like, I would not, did not want anything like everything which is going on right now to happen. Like, to see the things which led to that Black Lives Matter protests, like, that was horrifying. And, like, but to be honest, we actually delayed the project. The initial plan was to launch it in Pride Month and be like, oh, this is a comic project for Pride Month, you know, which you can back and support. And then obviously everything started and those awful things like the George Floyd murder sort of became world news. And it was just one of those things where, like, we can't launch now, not in a sense of like, oh, we'll not get attention, but like, it's not the right time. This is not something we should look like we're taking advantage of.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, there are more important things which need to be talked about and sort of raised up right now. So, like, my Kickstarter can wait, kind of thing. So in the end, that's why, like, we released for basically like the last week of Pride Month. So we could still technically say launch for Pride Month.
Yeah.
But then in talking about it and in launching it, it was then sort of realizing and seeing, obviously, the Black Lives Matter protests, which became a global phenomenon at that point. It was like, you know what, this book does actually kind of speak to that. Like, not in the sense that the book is about Black Lives Matter or anything like that, but it's about that thing of being a minority identity and that justified anger, that righteous anger, which you can get when the system has been built to work against you.
Exactly.
For so long. Right. And it kind of does touch on that. I mean, like, we touch on that, we touch a bit on, like, police culpability in these kind of things as well. So it's kind of touching on a few things without being explicitly about them, because as much as you say, like, you're coming from a white cisgender straight point of view, I'm still a white cisgender male guy myself, so I can't talk from Black Lives Matter kind of
true,
point of
true.
View or anything, you know. But I would say that it's sort of come out, or rather it's kickstarting at a time where I think there is that sort of cross-section of relatability to what is going on in our world right now, which was not expected, not entirely desired, because, like, obviously no one wants these awful things to be happening, but at the same time, I think maybe worked in our favor a little bit, in the sense of people were very much talking about these problems, which is awesome, and people should have been talking about them for a long time, and this is just another element which sort of ties into it. And yet at the same time, like I say, trying to tell it in a fun, entertaining way, which isn't all grim and dour and, oh my God, woe is me kind of thing. But also trying to handle it all sensitively. So, like, the book's going to come with content warnings on the front, because obviously it is going to deal with triggering situations and topics. So we're going to sort of try and be as aware and sensitive to that kind of stuff as possible.
That's awesome. Right. Now, let me ask you this question. How was the launching of a Kickstarter in the middle of a global pandemic? How did you handle that one? Because you've really kind of picked a time for this.
Oh, yeah.
Or Apocalypse 2020, as we
know. Oh, I know. Right? It's so popular. The thing with it, as well as, like, by way of plan being launched in Pride Month, the initial plan was to launch in March. and then the pandemic started and lockdowns began, and we were like, oh God. And I was like, I am not launching a Kickstarter right now. I do not know how that will happen. I started seeing more and more people and some friends of mine launching Kickstarter projects, and they were doing not just all right, but actually pretty great. So
yeah.
I was a bit like, oh, okay, maybe it's going to be safe to do it. So we sort of went to our Pride Month plan and that sort of going the way it did. But it was still a case of all the way leading up to it, no matter how many pages we got ready, no matter how much we got that logo to look sparkly and awesome.
It looks great.
Like, that is all Spire Eaton, who did an absolutely tremendous job. But yeah, as well as all those things, getting ready for it, it was still a case of, like, until we launched and started seeing the support, I was freaking out. Like, I think of launching a Kickstarter right now in the middle of all of this. I was just like, I don't know how this is going to go.
You just feel like a shit heel, right? Like, you feel like, dude, people are worried about their jobs and how they're going to make rent. And here I am. Hey, man, you know.
Back my Kickstarter.
Yeah. It's like, and it was just one of those things where I was just kind of very nervous and very, and I think anyone who's launching a Kickstarter right now probably feels like, particularly seen as, this one is launching, it was launching with a fairly high goal compared to other comic projects which were launching at the time. Mm-hmm. So like I saw a few, I think like the highest one I'd seen before I launched was like £2,500. Mm-hmm. And I was wanting to launch for 8,000. So I was a bit like, I don't know how we're going to do, but I was like, I can't keep on putting this off. Like, Katie's been drawing up a storm. Like, I can't keep on putting it off and being like, we need to raise money so I can pay you.
Exactly. Like,
yeah, so we just got to that stage and I launched it, and then to see the outpouring of support that it got, and to see, like, this is my 7th Kickstarter project now. Wow. And to have the Kickstarter projects we love thing within the space of about an hour, or just under 2 hours, I think. And it was just like, that's the fastest I've ever had that sort of notification added on to my project. So I was just like, whoa, what the heck is going on here?
That's wonderful.
And it which is feel weird so about that better. That title too, with the projects we love, because because we've done a couple and like they had them and we did one and it didn't have it and we were like, well, why doesn't this one have it and these ones have it? Is it the idea? Like, what prompts you to get that on Kickstarter? And then you said you did 7 other ones. So how many of your 7 got the projects we love? Just so people understand the dimensions of that.
I think of the 7, is it 7 launch? Yeah, I think 7 launched in total. One was unsuccessful, and that was because of I think it was because of the time that I launched. I launched in December.
December's tough. December's tough.
So like we launched the same item then like the following year, and it funded no problem. So. And I think that got a project we love as well. So I think like the one which failed, I'm not sure if that got it. And I think there was a time I did the Pride Adventures 5. So like a single issue, I'm not sure if that got it either. But like pretty much everything else got a project we love sticker on it from Kickstarter. But like usually it would be like 2 weeks into the project or something like that. Like this was like within 2 hours. I was just like, what the hell? Like. So it was crazy to see it getting that kind of support that quick, you know.
That's awesome. A relief. And I do like how you're kind of humble bragging about that. Like, yeah, you know, it was 2 hours. I mean,
here's the thing. I'm British. I'm not very big at just being like, yeah, I'm freaking awesome. Like,
you
I
should. Got to work out. Like, dude, Joe, with this idea and this concept, it's just so perfect.
We were talking about it after we finished talking to Jason McNamara, because a lot of times we'll stay on to do the outro and the intro of the pod. And we were like looking over your Kickstarter and gushing about how great it was. And like Bob said, we're two cisgender guys who are like, dude, this is amazing. Like, how come nobody thought of doing this sort of thing before? And how come like it's taken this long for people to be like, this is amazing, because it just sounds like great. And Bob was saying all kinds of gushing wonderful things about it. He's like, he's like, just a description of glittery baseball bats.
Yeah.
He's like, it's awesome.
It's
like,
perfect,
dope,
man. You know? Like, did you just keep kind of like, just kind of seeing how far you could push the boundary with it?
It kind of was like, it was like, as I kept on going, like, and was trying to think of the idea of this like street gang idea, but trying not to be like too dour or grim and serious about things. It was just like, well, what can I do to make this cathartic story also be something which is just like, it's just fun, you know. So like one of the first things I think was like having thinking in my head like, oh yeah, she'd have a baseball bat, but it's going to be like covered in sequins and just be like really glittery and shiny, and she's smacking some bigot in the face, and it's just like you'll get like some nosebleed and sequins flying off in the distance. That's just going to look fabulous, you know. And we just kept on adding elements. So it's like, when Katie sent her first passes at by Felicia's outfit, like I just said to her, like, oh, what about adding fringe to the jacket? Because when you draw her like swinging, you're gonna have the fringe movement as well, and that's just gonna look really good. And she was just like, oh God, yeah. And yeah, we started adding the the idea that they wear like the face masks, but they have like the serpent fangs on them.
That's awesome.
For the Vipers element. And I was like, oh, what if By Felicia's has lipstick around it? So like almost like she's in drag in her face mask kind of thing. And we just added like little things like that because we're just like, oh, these little sort of touches to just be a little fun and be this more branded, not branded identity, but like this kind of this idea that they're out there being like as visually pop. Mm-hmm.
No, of course. I mean, I think, you know, everyone has a picture in their head of what a drag queen is. If you've seen RuPaul's Drag Race, if you've gone to like a drag brunch, you know what a drag queen consists of. So like the idea of a gang, like it's got to be over the top. It's got to be super, it's got to be like Las Vegas, basically. And like, you know, and that's just wonderful. Like the whole idea of it's just wonderful. Now, what I want to kind of ask about is you're doing all this in 60 pages, you said, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Is there like a, because they're beating up like homophobes and this, that, and the other thing, but is there like a like king homophobe that they're like specifically going for? Like, is there like a main antagonist, or is this just kind of random, like just rando, I guess, homophobes in Manchester?
It's one of those things where it's like to go into it too much might be getting too deep into spoiler territory.
Okay.
They do kind of stumble across this conspiracy.
Cool. All right. Perfect.
Because, like, basically, what I was like looking at, like, I think I've discussed in other things before, was like how the idea came from seeing news stories about various sort of like homophobic attacks and things like that, and how like since things like Brexit and since certain people like, you know, conservatives get into power, like we get an increase in homophobic attacks. And then I was just like, well, what if there was someone behind that? What if there was like this reason for the increase beyond? You have a Tory government who make homophobes feel like they can come out of the shadows. What if it was actually someone like pulling strings a little bit? So we kind of have a character who is hinted at very early on, who might have some connection to the things which happened to the gang before they formed the gang. So
that makes it even better because most exploitation films, whether it's blaxploitation or whatever, has the man behind the scenes pulling the string. So the fact that you're even kind of referencing that kind of just digs deeper into that grindhouse vibe of it.
Also, it feels very culturally relevant because like in here in the US, we had 8 years of Obama where everything, like, I felt like everything was pretty awesome. I was like, oh, we're getting places as a cunt. And then you get Trump and then you go, what the fuck just happened to my country? Like, I thought everything was getting better. And then you go, no, secretly it was all worse and you just never knew. And I was like, that was awful. Like, you know, it's awful. Like to come to that realization after you think things are actually getting better.
Real. And it was, for me, that was kind of important why I had to have the events which take place happen in and around the Manchester gay village in the UK. I don't know how familiar you guys are with it, but like, in Manchester in the UK, there's Canal Street, which is like this incredibly, it's like a gay ghetto almost, in that like it's loads of gay venues all together on one street. And it'll be like in the middle of the night, you'll have drag queens coming up, walking up and down the street, like sort of getting people to come into their night on their various pubs kind of thing. So it was kind of important to me that this centered around that area to have this idea of like, even our places we're meant to be safe aren't feeling that safe anymore. And I think that, again, it's, as you say, like something which anyone can relate to, whether they're queer or not. Like even a straight audience should be able to relate to that idea, because like they'll have had this one view of like, oh yeah, we're going this one way and it's looking great and it's going to be fantastic, and then on a dime it just changes and you're like, oh wow, there was actually, I was never safe. It wasn't, there was actually this problem bubbling under the surface which I didn't see. So
that's
I kind of think it kind of will make it a little relevant to everyone a little bit that way.
That's great, man. Like, you have almost 500 backers on Kickstarter. I'm not sure when this is going to, when we are going to release the episode, because we have a couple in the can already. So I don't know. We're going to try to squeeze it in to get towards the end of your Kickstarter. But you've got almost 500 backers. You've made over 11 Gs. Like, this has got to be just, like, such a wonderfully validating feeling for you, right? That, like, so many people believe in this idea. That is very fringe. I mean, you know.
Yeah, totally. Like, and it's the same with, like, when I first launched for Pride on Kickstarter and things. So obviously, the Pride of that point, I've been self-publishing for about 5-6 years. And then I did a Kickstarter to do the hardcover collection of it all. And that is still currently my most backed Kickstarter, because it had like 620 backers.
Wow, that's awesome.
Oh yeah, and it was like 25 grand, I think we finished on at the end. But that was also like, yeah, at high goal. We were looking for 20 grand kind of thing. So yeah, it's been great to see that places like Kickstarter are really great places for fringe and sort of niche sort of topics. Yes,
outside of the box stuff, media. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it feels like there's a lot more queer audiences looking to things like Kickstarter rather than the comic store per se, because they haven't really been very well catered by the comic store for 4 years or whatever. So it's just like, oh yeah, we'll go to Kickstarter because there's actually heaps of LGBTQ.
And you're not even sure, not disparaging any of the comic shops, but you don't know what you're walking into a lot of the times. If you're just walking into a comic shop for the first time, you don't know if you're walking into a store that's not going to really believe in these ideas that you're talking about. The guys that are still mad that Thor was a lady for a little while. You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't know where you are and what you're doing. So this is kind of the perfect venue for that. But I mean, tell us about Pride, because that was the first thing that you got kind of put on the map for. Tell the audience what that's all about.
Yeah, so Pride, for anyone who doesn't know, is a comic book series all about a team of all LGBTQ superheroes. Basically just came from the fact that superheroes is my favorite genre. It's what I love most. Like, for all the times you'll get independent creators like me, like my peers who are being like, superheroes, Marvel, DC. I'm just like, no, I'm fully like Marvel. I wanna, like, that is like the dream kind of thing. It was always my thing, but like, I never saw myself in there, and then like never saw my community in there. Like, you would get your metaphors and your analogs and things like that. I mean, like, X-Men was my book, was the one I absolutely loved and grew up on. But even then, it was like, it's not explicitly about people like me. It's not, it's very much like, oh, it's about you, but we can't say it.
It's undercurrent.
Exactly. Yeah. And it just kind of felt a bit like there's so only so far you can go with that. Like, because when you make it sort of subtext, there's and not text, there's always that element of like, oh, it's about me, but we can't talk about it. I mean, you start feeling a bit like, well, why can't we talk about it? What is it about me that we can't talk about, kind of thing? So the Pride came about from just wanting to do superhero stories because I love them so much, and just being like, I also kind of want to see myself and see my friends and stuff like that in the heroes and the characters. And I did it, and I kind of thought, like, no one's gonna like it, it's gonna be just for me kind of thing. And then it just got such a great audience and support from like say I started off, I was pretty much just self-publishing and doing like the local comic book scene here in the UK, doing comic cons, and like the number of people who'd be coming back to the table or being repeatedly coming back every new con looking for new issues, it just built from there. Obviously, like I say, after about 5-6 years, I had by that point 6 issues of the Pride out.
Oh wow.
3 issues of the Pride Adventures. And we did a collection for a hardcover, which would collect all 9 comics which were released at that time, and then a new comics worth of new adventures.
Wow, dude, that's crazy.
Oh yeah. Which we then released like later as a single issue for the people who like to buy single issues rather than collections.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, like it was collected before it was released kind of thing. But but yeah, so in the end, it was like 10 comics within this great big hardcover. And that was my first Kickstarter. And like I say, it was supported hugely, built the audience up. And the audience was already pretty big at that point because I'd been on Comixology Submit at that time, because where you upload yourself kind of thing.
Yes.
And Comixology was super supportive even back then, when I was just an indie creator uploading my own stuff kind of thing. They would have, like, if they found out I was at New York Comic Con as well, they'd be like, oh, hey, do you want to do this panel with us? And I'd be like, why are you asking me? So I'd be on this panel with someone like Jimmy Palmiotti, and I'm just like, why am I here?
Dude, that's awesome, though.
That's awesome, though.
Yeah, was, so it was, like, nice to have that kind of support, and it just meant that when Comixology Originals rolled around, I was just a bit like, how do I do one of those? Like,
yeah.
And at that point, I knew I wanted to do more Pride, but it was getting beyond the scope of what I could handle by myself. Like, I needed support from a publisher kind of thing. And I just pitched that idea to Comixology and just being like, well, how about you guys help me make a new season of the Pride? And from there, like, that's how that happened. And now Pride's got two seasons. There's the spin-off Pride Adventures season as well. There's hopefully going to be some more Pride in the future. So yeah, things have been really going off really great for that particular series.
That's awesome.
So my question is, since you said you're into super, what are your favorite DC and Marvel superheroes that led to these creations? Because what ends up happening when you're an independent creator is you go, man, I'd love to write,
let's say, Booster Gold,
for example.
It's so like Batman, but gay.
Yeah, but then you do that, like what Bobby's talking about. Yeah. So what were your two favorites? So when I read this Pride Adventures, I can go, oh, I can see his influence here is...
Like, for me, I mean, I think I've already touched on it, like, X-Men for Marvel is very much my big thing. Like, I spent so long where I was, like, just reading X-Men books, you know? Like, all of them, pretty much. like, I never read an Avengers book. Like, I wouldn't, like, I'd be like, oh, that's a whole other part of the universe. I don't need that part. I just want the X-Men part kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So for years, that was my Marvel thing. I'm ride or die X-Men all the way. And then DC was weird. Like, I was... Being as well the big X-Men head, I was very much a Marvel head for years. Like, I didn't read DC books until I was into my late teens. So, Ben, it was, like, mainly Vertigo. So, like, I was reading things like Sandman and stuff.
Okay.
But in terms of, like, DC superheroes that I really love, I'd probably say my favorite is Wonder Woman, which sounds like such a cliche answer for a gay man to give. But it kind of is, like, I just love that. When she's done right, she's not a typical superhero. She's right. Like, doesn't go in fists bare and just crashing through and blowing things up. She's much more about finding the compassion in the situation, which, you know, to some people who like the big explosions and everything can sound really boring, but it's just like, no, that's fascinating. That's what a superhero really should be to me, kind of thing. So it's kind of like this mix between X-Men and Wonder Woman. So Wonder Woman's because she's that figure of something to be hopeful and to strive towards. And for X-Men, it's kind of got that whole soap opera aspect, which I tried to tie into in the Pride a little bit. And when someone actually once, I asked them for a blurb, who was it? James Asmus. I asked him if he'd provide blurb for a Pride release at some point. And he was just like, oh yeah, if you like Chris Claremont X-Men, then you're going to love this. And I was like, oh my God.
Wow, Jesus, that's high praise right there.
Yeah, I mean, like, I've definitely got the soap opera elements. I was about to say I don't have the BDSM elements much, but then again, Bay wears a leather harness. So, like, maybe.
That's awesome.
That's cool. So, like, if I want to check out the Pride stuff, I can get it on Comixology. It's available there.
Yeah.
And the Glitter Vipers, it's on Kickstarter. You are just, I mean, I couldn't be happier for you. This book is such a wonderful idea.
Thank you so much.
Congratulations on your success. And I hope there's more of this. Do you plan on doing more Glitter Vipers? Like, is this going to be like your 60-page kind of single contained, or do you have more stories to tell in this universe?
It's definitely single contained for now.
Okay.
I've not really thought about coming back to it or taking the story further. Like, I very much wanted to have something where people could get it and that's all they necessarily need, you know? So it's very self-contained for now. I'm not above, given particularly how much support it's had, possibly revisiting the world someday. Like, if I think I can come up with something else which really can be said with those characters in that world again, then yeah, absolutely, I'll come back. Particularly if
That's
Kate
awesome.
Wants to come back and Ted and everyone wants to come back and join in and sort of help me make it all together again. But yeah, maybe. But for now, everything's self-contained.
Okay.
So one thing I don't think that the general public understands that we talk about a lot is with Kickstarter, you said you were going for like an 8,000 pound goal. So is that the cost of your comic? Because like people, I think the general public, what they don't get is when they see a large goal on a Kickstarter, they instantly go, oh, this person's trying to make like loot off of their comic, which isn't hardly ever the case.
I'm not making a penny off that.
Right. So I mean,
8,000. When we get that 8,000 pound, that's going in my bank account and immediately leaving.
Distributing to your fellow co-creators and collaborators.
Exactly. Like I may sit on it for a day just to be like, oh, my bank account looks so nice right now.
you're strictly the middleman. You're the middleman.
Yeah. It's like, for me, I will be printing off enough copies that I can then take them to Comic Cons. So like for me, like that's how I'll try and make some personal money for mm-hmm. myself, from sales on my Comic Con table, you know?
Okay. We're very much in the same boat.
We're in the same boat. Yeah. That's the reason why I bring it up, is because people say things all the time. Like, they don't realize.
Oh, yeah. I get it all the time. Like, people go, like, it happens. Like, I work a day job as well, and be like, oh, you must be rolling it. You're going to have a really good night out on that. And I'm just like, no. That money is going to go straight to an artist, colorist, letterer, like everyone. You have
printers. No, yeah. Yeah. To print the book. Yeah. That's the thing that I try and bring to people's attention, is like, yeah, that looks like a lot, but when you think about everybody that has to get paid on a project, mm-hmm. and as a writer yourself, you're not paying yourself, then it's not really as much as you think it is.
And it's likewise now with the, like I say, we've hit target and we've still got like 10 days or whatever to go at this time speaking kind of thing. But if I bizarrely ended on double that amount, I'm not going to be like, all right, but I'm going to keep the every grand now. It's going to be like, yeah. I'll be giving everyone a raise. Like, I'll be like, I'll pay them double their page rate or something.
Start coming up with a second idea for this story.
As well. Like, I'll keep a little nest maybe for the second idea. Wow. It's not going to be like, oh, I'm going to buy myself a new computer or something like that. Or I was supposed to say I go to Disney World, but right now, definitely not not going to Disney World.
I'm sure there's cheap flights, my friend. You probably couldn't get, they probably wouldn't let you, well, no, because the EU has, but you guys aren't really in the EU anymore.
We're allowed to go to France.
That's
like,
nice.
Disneyland Paris, but like.
That's still a thing? I didn't even know that was still open.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
That's because we're dirty Americans, Bobby.
Nobody wants us. I know. Nobody wants us anymore.
We're awful.
We've earned that.
We've earned it. Right,
yes. Well, dude, congratulations on your success. Again, it's such a wonderful idea. Check out the Pride stuff on Comixology. Search Glitter Vipers on Kickstarter. And again, congratulations. And where can we find you on social media and such things?
Yeah, on Twitter, I'm at Joseph Glass, because someone beat me to Joe Glass.
Bastards.
I know, right? And then, what was it? So Twitter, I'm Joseph Glass. Instagram, I'm at Joe Glass, all one word. And I've also got a website, which is www.joeglasscomics.co.uk.
All right. Well, congratulations on your success, my friend.
In case Bobby didn't ask you yet, before you leave, what's your favorite what's your favorite football team in the Premier League?
not to be like that guy, but like, I'm a stereotypical gay man. I do not watch football. soccer.
It's football. I watch football. I don't watch soccer. I watch football. I'm a football guy.
That's the joke here. Bobby loves Man City, so I don't watch football either. I don't watch any sports.
When I wasn't out of the closet, I was probably a Manchester United fan.
he likes Man City, that's why.
That's totally fine and understandable. I probably only like Man United because there's a few cute boys on there.
There was, yeah. Yeah. They had all the cute boys back in the day. Well, that's awesome. Congratulations on your success, Joe.
Thank you so much.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful.
Thank you for coming and talking to us, Joe. It's amazing.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for inviting me.
Was the amazing Joe Glass, and he was talking to you about his Kickstarter right now, Glitter Vipers. He was amazing.
Good dude. Good idea.
He was a lot of fun to talk to too. Yeah. So like it was great. It was one of our more fun pods to record. So like he was just very enthusiastic about his projects and very, very fun to talk to about how projects come to be. So like you get to learn something and be entertained at the same time.
And how could you not be enthusiastic about a book that's about a gang of drag queens that beat up homophobes in jolly old England? Like that sounds wonderful.
Like Tu Wong Fu, yeah. and meets Death Wish. So that's amazing.
Everything about that statement just puts a smile on my face. Like,
well,
it's just,
I mean, did you like Tu Wong Fu? I loved it.
I never saw Tu Wong Fu.
It's a great movie.
If it's streaming somewhere, maybe I'll check it out.
It's your man's in them. Patrick Swayze is one of the drag queens.
I know
you love Patrick Swayze.
It's Swayze,
Snipes,
and John Leguizamo.
Leguizamo.
One of these things does not belong.
Probably John Leguizamo.
Yes, that's the answer. That's the correct answer that I was looking for. Thank you so much for listening. I think we're going to have Jamie Jones on soon. He's running a Kickstarter for his Jamboree Pink Lemonade Baboon thing. And Jamie's always just fun to talk to. He's one of my favorite people in comics. So we'll talk to Jamie soon. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll be back next week with more Word Bros.
You're listening to the Word Bros Podcast, thewordbros.com.